I'm Brandi Cruz, coming up today on Undivided. Tuesday was a great night for socialism, a bad night for America. Plus, Seattle's failed homelessness authority is getting more money despite the number of homeless people continuing to rise. And FIFA fans coming to Seattle for the World Cup are being given advice on how to use deadly drugs. Great. That and much more coming up today on Undivided. Remember, you can support our show for just $5 a month by signing up at undividedpod.com. That's undividedpod.com. Click on the banner that says support the show. Hello and welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. I'm Brandi Cruz. It's Zohran Mamdani's world and we're all just living in it. Disastrous night for America yesterday in the New York primaries, but a really good night if you think for some reason that after all these years, socialism will finally work somewhere. So we already probably by November will have three of the largest cities in America run by avowed socialists, either members of the Democratic Socialists of America or like Seattle Mayor Katie Wilson, just says she'll be called anything. You can even call her a communist and it won't bother her. So in Seattle, we have Katie Wilson. In New York City, we have Zohran Mamdani. And then it is very possible that down in Los Angeles, Nithya Raman beats Karen Bass and becomes the mayor of Los Angeles. And this is scary stuff because, again, I mean, it's exhausting, really, that we have to continue to talk about the dangers of socialism and the fact that socialism leads to communism and that that is closer to fascism than any thing Donald Trump is doing and that it never works and it drives everyone into poverty and misery. But here we are. And I guess you have these people who are clinging to hope that socialism and this failed experiment will sort of change their lives. But I will say, you know, the three, you know, mayors who I think are the most significant examples of socialism taking root in America today, Zohran Mamdani is absolutely the ringleader. And he's the only one of them with an ounce of charisma. I mean, he's the only one of them. And I'll give it to him. I mean, the guy was a nepotism baby, just like Katie Wilson. But he actually he rapped for a couple months or something on Mommy and Daddy's Teat. But he has charisma. He is very good at delivering a message. I will not take that from the man. He is a very, very good orator. And so he endorsed a slate of socialist candidates up for election in New York City and New York State, and nearly every single one of them won. Two congressional candidates that he endorsed that are Democratic Socialists, belong to the New York City Democratic Socialists of America, won their primaries, which means they'll likely win the actual election. That is Dara Liza Avila Chevallar in the Congressional District 13, and then Claire Valdez, who just won the race for New York's 7th Congressional District, both of them endorsed by Mamdani. The New York City Democratic Socialist put out these posts. In case you're wondering what Dara Liza's priorities are, it says, we can't wait to see how she fights to abolish ICE, end the genocide in Gaza, and fight for working class people every single day. Very similar for Claire Valdez. Here's her speaking about her priorities. Hint, her priority is not the United States of America.
So are we ready to free Palestine? Yes! Are we ready to abolish ICE? Yes!
Good God. I mean, in about foreign interests. This is about foreign interests. And yes, abolishing ICE is about foreign interests. It's about allowing foreigners to come here illegally and stay here, no matter what they've done, no matter the reasons that they came here. And of course, this obsession with Gaza. And it's not just at the congressional level. This is working its way through all the tentacles of government. It was insane to see the number of candidates to at the state level in New York, and not only in New York City, like in upstate New York, who are members of the Democratic Socialists of America, who will now be going to Albany to make public policy. Here is, let's see, Aber Kawas won. Here's what the New York City Democratic Socialists of America said. Palestine was on the ballot. And now a Palestinian-American Democratic Socialist. Palestine was on the ballot. This chick's running for New York State Senate. Palestine was on the ballot? Says she's going to Albany to fight for New Yorkers in the state Senate because socialists get it done. Well, here's what Abar Kawas thinks about 9/11.
The system of capitalism and racism and white supremacy, et cetera, have all, and Islamophobia have all been used, to colonize lands, right, to take resources from other people. And so this is like a long trajectory. And we're just seeing the manifestations of that continuation, right, with 9/11. And so a lot of times when people are asking us to respond about, you know, attack, right, when if you look back like historically, right, a lot of us come from lands that were colonized, lands where wars are being waged, right? And a lot of times because of U.S. policy or the policies in Europe.
So essentially, 9/11 was justified because we colonized America. It is absolutely insane. And as I said, it's not just, if you look at the whole slate of New York City DSA candidates, so this goes from candidates for legislative districts to in the state assembly to congressional races, they won nearly every single one. God, I don't know what poor Conrad Blackburn did. He's like the only member. But he was, again, buddy-buddy with Zohran Mamdani. But nearly every single one was victorious in the primary in New York yesterday. And that is, I mean, they all ran on like free Palestine. And they hate America. And they cling to socialist ideals that have failed over and over and over again. And these people successfully convince the working class that socialism will, what, lift them out of poverty? That's not what socialism does. Socialism just makes everyone poor. So they're just all equal. You're all equally miserable. It is the craziest thing. And this isn't unique to New York. Again, I mean, you probably have a socialist who's going to win in LA. We have a socialist mayor in Seattle. We have a socialist, Sean Scott, representing Seattle in the State House in Olympia. You'll remember I had him on the show, and he thinks Cuba is wonderful.
A good example of socialism working well somewhere, this is a really, really cool question. I think of Cuba in particular, very, very high literacy rate, number one. Number two, extremely strong commitment to public health, so much so that when there are other ailments that are happening throughout the hemisphere, there's oftentimes Cuban doctors that you will see on the front lines of public health administration, their commitment to education. And we look at the fact that we make some of our largest expenditures in healthcare, which is run a lot of ways along a privatized model in this country. And we don't get the outcomes that this small country has been getting for decades. So that's one example that I can think of that would resonate with pretty much anybody in our state who cares about education or healthcare. Would you disagree with that?
People flee on makeshift rafts and die in the ocean to flee Cuba for the United States.
Yeah, and I think that that is something that absolutely we have to be sensitive to. But you asked me about institutions that are working really, really well.
I asked you about places socialism is working, and you chose a country that people will risk their lives to flee from to this country. There's a reason for that, Sean.
I mean, people, Cubans, would rather get eaten by a shark in the ocean than live in socialism, than live in communism. And this is proliferating. For any Democrat who's worried about, like, and thinks Donald Trump is a fascist, wait till you see real fascism. Wait till you see what that looks like. And it's not from the far right in America. It is from the far left, the socialists, the communists. And Lord only knows, if this is the wave, right? If this is the wave that we're seeing now in the midterm elections, what candidate are Democrats going to put up in 2028? I bet everything I have right now, it's AOC. If this is the political wave, if it's Nithya Raman in LA, Katie Wilson in Seattle, if in New York and elsewhere in the country, it's Democratic socialists, it's going to be AOC. And maybe I should welcome that because I hope that Americans, reasonable Americans in the heartland, wouldn't vote for AOC. But they're so spun up on their TDS, they might just think that AOC is a better bet than J.D. Vance or Marco Rubio. And guess what? Democrats would still back them no matter what. I think another race that happened last night is a good example of this. So Dan Goldman lost his seat in New York. So he's a member of Congress, a Democratic member of Congress from New York. He lost it to Brad Lander, who Brad Lander is like a nobody. I think he was the comptroller in New York, and you're probably like, well, why do I know him? Because he's also been making headlines for getting arrested, basically trying to interfere with immigration enforcement. He's been arrested twice. He was arrested at an ICE facility, and then he was arrested, and that had to do with trying to inspect, I guess, conditions at the ICE facility. And then I think the other one was, the Manhattan Federal Building he was arrested at, trying to like help immigrants who were going through deportation proceedings and stuff. So you probably didn't recognize his name from him being the comptroller, but you probably recognize his name from being arrested. So he ends up beating Dan Goldman last night, right? Here is Brad Lander talking about Israel at a mosque.
Yes, in Congress, I will not vote for any more U.S. military aid to Israel. The kind of partnership I developed with Soran, I hope to come to have with Rashida Tlaib and Ilhan Omar and others in Congress to show we can build a city and a country and a world that everyone can afford, and where everyone is welcome, and where everyone's humanity is respected.
Yeah, when I think of people who respect everyone's humanity and when everyone is welcome, I think of Ilhan Omar and Rashida Tlaib. I mean, Rashida Tlaib just yesterday, remember the Antifa terrorists who were sentenced in Texas for organizing a plot to attack a federal detention facility, and they shot a police officer in the neck? Yet she thinks they're martyrs. She said, these sentences are a travesty and totally unjustified. But that's the point. Americans hate the fascist Trump regime, so the only way they can try to cling to power is brute force. Calls them BS terrorism charges. Yeah, that's someone. And Brad Lander's like, can't wait to work with her. And that's the guy who Democrats sent through the primary to go to Congress, and they unseated Dan Goldman. Now, lest you think, you know, Brad Lander is anti-Jewish and shares this sort of anti-Jewish sentiment that is growing pretty rapidly on the left, both Lander and Goldman are Jewish. But Lander has taken this stance of sort of, you know, free Palestine and Israel is committing genocide and war crimes, etc. And Dan Goldman, on the other hand, even though he's Jewish, they're both Jewish, he has been accused of being too friendly to Israel. And so what has been the result of that? His own party has targeted him. This is outside of his office. His office has been vandalized. Blood on your hands. Free Palestine. Let Gaza live. We talked on the show yesterday about this coffee shop in New York that took a picture of him when he came in, totally unbeknownst to him, said, we see you stop by our shop today for a coffee. Do you see how it doesn't taste like genocide juice? Or are you still having a hard time telling the difference? Saying they won't serve him. And so his own party ate him alive. His own party is attacking him because he's Jewish and he's too friendly to Israel. His own party is making him feel unsafe. It's absolutely insane. And so Dan Goldman, after he loses to Brad Lander last night, he goes on CNN and does he attack the vitriol in his own party and this very disturbing trend toward anti-Semitism and extremism? No, of course not. He goes after Orange Man Bad.
We're better than this, and we need to be better than this, and we have to stop dividing ourselves so much and try to find the common ground and unify, especially within the Democratic Party, because the person who is inflicting so much damage on every New Yorker's lives on a day-to-day basis is not 6,000 miles away. He's in 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue. And that is who the enemy is that we all need to unify to stop.
Even so-called moderate Democrats, they don't see the enemy as socialism. They don't see the enemy as communism, even if the socialists and the communists attack them personally. Even if the socialists and communists go to their home and vandalize their home. I think of Congressman Adam Smith in Washington State, whose home has been targeted night after night by left-wing radicals because of his support for Israel. But still, he spends more time talking about Donald Trump than talking about them. He's condemned them. But he still looks at Donald Trump as the enemy, and so does Dan Goldman, even if it cost him his seat in Congress. And so Democrats and moderates, reasonable Democrats, they have a choice to make. Are you going to allow your party to become the party of socialism and communism? Or are you going to be so focused and continue to focus on Orange Man Bad, who'll be out of the freaking White House in just a couple years? And I think the answer is clear. And they're scared, right? They're scared of their seats being taken. Adam Smith, he has a socialist, Shama Sawant, running against him. Now, I've said I don't think she has a chance of winning, but maybe I should reevaluate that. And so the reality for these Democrats that they have to understand is they're coming for you. It doesn't matter if you get on CNN and talk about how bad Donald Trump is. Dan Goldman did that all the time. You're not far enough left for them. They're coming for you. They're going to primary you, and they are going to win. So this is about your survival, your political survival, and it's about the future of the Democratic Party. Because we're going to continue to see a lot more of this. You don't think that these wins in New York are going to embolden more people, more socialists? And they do it, you know, via threats, coercion, intimidation. Look at Shama Sawant. She sends her minions to show up and harass Adam Smith at his home, Adam Smith at town halls. He had to stop doing town halls. And still, Adam Smith is like more focused on Donald Trump than that threat. So it's decision time for rational Democrats. Do you let your party be consumed by these radicals? Or do you, for just a second, set aside your decade-long TDS to save the country and save your own ass? That is really the question that you have to answer. All right, coming up next, the King County Regional Homelessness Authority is absolutely failing, and it's full of fraud and waste. So what's the answer? Give them more money, of course. Always the answer. First, if you're thinking about leaving Washington State, don't go to New York, obviously, but maybe going somewhere more sane, or if you're just moving across the street, downsizing, upsizing, whatever it is, reach out to our friend Wes Jones at sellwithwes.com. He gets so many great reviews. This is from Jim H., a recent client, gave him 5 stars. We packed our bags, hit the road to a new state, but we jump at the chance to work with Wes again in a heartbeat. Says they turned our long distance deal into a breezy walk in the park from beginning to end. I love to hear that. I've heard so many good reviews from you guys about Wes Jones and his team. So go to sellwithwes.com, sellwithwes.com, and go from Sell with Wes to Sold with Wes. You can peruse some of the recent listings he's been able to sell for clients. And I think right now, given the state of the market, a lot of inventory coming online, not as many people coming into the state to buy those homes because, you know, taxes and stuff. I think the best thing to do is ask Wes for a free market analysis. So he'll give you kind of the lay of the land. Here's how things are going in your area. Here's how long it might take for you to sell your home, etc. And then you come up with a game plan. And then you move forward from there, and Wes will have your back every step of the way. Sellwithwes.com. It really just is a better way to sell your home. All right, the failed King County Regional Homelessness Authority apparently hasn't failed enough, although I would argue in 5 short years, they have proven that the homeless bureaucracy is really responsible for the homeless crisis, but they haven't failed quite enough. And so the city of Seattle and King County are going to give them more money to prop themselves up. This segment is brought to you in partnership with our friends at Future 42. Turn your frustration into action at future42.org. Okay, so there's something that happens every single year in Seattle and King County, and it's called the point in time count. And they literally will go out there and do their best to try to count every single person that's living outdoors, every single homeless person or living in emergency shelter, to try to get an idea as best they can, really, of how bad the crisis is. Hint, it's really bad, and hint, it's getting worse. So the King County Regional Homelessness Authority does these point in time counts, and here's what they found. They found that from 2024 to 2026, homelessness has spiked 10%. We now have 18,365, roughly, homeless people living on the streets of King County. That's compared to about 17,000 just 2 years ago and 13,000 4 years ago. So it was a 26% increase, and then it was a 9% increase. And now, rather than say, and that's, by the way, while the King County Regional Homelessness Authority's budget has been ballooning, and while the amount of money that Seattle and the state spends combating homelessness has increased exponentially. And what do we get for that increase? We still get a 10% increase in homelessness. Now, of course, the KCRHA is fighting for its life. So they got to spin these numbers in some way. And so what do they say? Well, the rate of increase has slowed. It was a 26% increase between 2022 and 2024, but then it dropped to just 10%, suggesting some stabilization. It's like, okay, you know what I'd like to see? I'd like to see the number go down. Is that really asking too much? Billions of dollars, billions of taxpayer dollars. Is it really asking too much to want to see a year where there's actually fewer homeless people on the streets than there was the year before. I mean, we talked about at one point the state of Washington under former Governor Jay Inslee. They were spending almost $1 million per person to remove them from encampments along state highways. And then they just never track them from there, right? It's like, oh, we did this. It's just they never do anything. It's absolutely outrageous. Now, their own data, because they'll go out, they'll count people, and then they'll try to talk to people about what is the issue here, right? Their own data proves what we've been saying all along and what sane people know is that this isn't a housing issue. This is an issue with people who have serious underlying problems that need to be addressed that are stopping them in some way from having a roof over their head, from being able to afford an apartment or buy a house. So what does the KCRHA's own data say? So 15%, it says, are survivors of domestic violence. And I don't doubt that. I think that that's probably a reality. And given how much money we spend, we should be able to help every single one of them in an instant. And keep in mind, there can be overlap here. For instance, 27% serious mental illness. You could have serious mental illness and be a survivor of domestic violence, so if that makes sense on how the numbers work. 33% substance use disorder. Baloney. 33% baloney. I think that's probably people lying to them, but still 35%. And then 35% are chronically homeless, which just means that they've experienced homelessness, you know, for an extended period of time, even when given shelter, fall back into homelessness. And then 5% are veterans. But I mean, it shows here that even the King County Regional Homelessness Authority recognizes that, you know, it's not like they don't have a little thing on here that says couldn't afford a house, you know, what number of them. And technically, I bet you that would be like 90% that couldn't actually afford a house. I mean, hell, some people with two incomes can't afford a house. But that's not the reason why they're unhoused, right? It's not the reason they're unhoused. They're drug addicted or they're mentally ill or some combination of those things. And so when it comes to, you know, the lie that continues to be told that this is a housing issue, right? Former Governor Jay Inslee said that's the fundamental issue. Bob Ferguson thinks that's the fundamental issue. Like every mayor we've had in Seattle thinks that's the fundamental issue. And so they've spent billions of dollars trying to build more housing, trying to lift up shelter. And here's what that looks like. So the number of emergency shelter beds over time has ballooned. I mean, back in 2020, we had like 4,000 and we have somewhere around 6,000 at the peak in 2025. And now Mayor Katie Wilson says she's trying to make that her priority, setting all these goals for tiny house shelters, although she hasn't come close to reaching those goals. But if we have, can you go back to the first graphic, Daryl, the chart? So it says that 36% of the people they counted as being homeless this past year of the 18,000 are in shelters. So you have 64% that are out of shelters. And yet you've had, according to the other graphic I showed you, this massive increase in the availability of emergency shelter, yet we're only sheltering a third of people. To me, that also says what we know to be true, and what if you go out with Andrea Suarez of We Heart Seattle, it's because you go out and you tell these people that you have a shelter bed for them or you have a tiny house for them, and if they can't openly use drugs in it and keep doing all the things they're doing, they're not gonna take it. I mean, Andrea has had stories where somebody gets out of a tent, they go into a tiny house village, she goes out the next day, they're back in the tent because for whatever reason, they didn't want to be in the tiny house or they didn't want to abide by whatever rules there are at some sort of shelter. So no, you've got to deal with the drug abuse and those issues. But so 10% spike over the last 2 years, and this all comes as the King County Regional Homelessness Authority was found to have some unaccounted for money, shall we say, some money that wasn't maybe tracked very well or used. So they've at points had a negative cash balance of up to $44 million. $4.5 million was lost to administrative overspending, including interest payments that can't be recovered. I mean, there's been a whole bunch of issues. So what is Seattle and King County's solution here? This is from our friends at the Center Square. Costs mount to stabilize struggling King County Regional Homelessness Authority. So remember, Katie Wilson came out, Girmay Zaha lied. There were people calling for it to be abolished. And Girmay and Katie said, no, we're not going to abolish it. We're going to hire a team of independent financial analysts to provide immediate oversight while they determine whether to repair or dissolve the agency. So according to Center Square, that's going to cost $1 million. So this financial failure of an agency that has also failed to reduce the number of homeless people on our streets in its 5 years of existence, it's gone up every year, they now get, because they wasted money and mistracked and misspent money, they now get another $1 million to try to stabilize the agency. While King County in Seattle decides, hey, should we just get rid of the agency? That's what we should do. We should piss away even more money while we sit here and ponder whether to get rid of it. And while people continue to die on our streets with needles in their arms, let's continue to do the thing that we know isn't working. That's government. That's government in a city run by progressives and socialists who think all of this is empathy, and they believe they track success by the amount of money spent. Success to them is how much money are we spending on this? And you can apply that to virtually any issue. Oh, we're spending this much money. We must be doing a good job. Well, they're just making their cronies and allies rich. It's absolutely outrageous. So failing agency, homelessness up, give it more money is the solution. Every time you give it more money, every time you give them more money, the outcome is worse. And that's by design. Homeless industrial complex, same thing with education. When we spend, the more we spend per pupil in Washington, what has happened? The worse educational outcomes have become. It's not a coincidence. It happens across the board. That segment is brought to you in partnership with our friends at Future 42. Turn your frustration into action at future42.org. Make sure you sign up for their newsletter to be alerted to opportunities to do just that. All right, we'll get to our segment, Unbelievable, coming up next. First, our friends at the Rental Housing Association can help you if you are a landlord in the state of Washington. They help small to mid-sized landlords really try to get a hold of all these changing rules and regulations. They can help you with screening and forms. And then they've got your back. I mean, they're down in Olympia trying to advocate for better housing policy, trying to stop the worst of the worst housing policy. And they have some really important property rights cases that they're working on, and your membership helps with those as well. And they also have events all year long. I've got an event with them coming up, I think, in a couple months, and they talk about all aspects of housing policy and politics in the state of Washington. So check them out, rhawa.org, rhawa.org. And with that, let's get to a double dose of Unbelievable. All right, this one's pretty quick, but I talk about unions being the thuggish mafia all the time. And really, at one point in history, unions were the mafia. And they want to act like they're not anymore, but they totally are. So Walrus and the Carpenter, I don't know if you've been there. It's like a very fancy, nice restaurant in Seattle. Well, apparently there's a little bit of a union dispute with some of its workers. And its workers allegedly have been, you know, outside doing their picketing thing and harassing customers as they try to go in and dine. So Walrus and the Carpenter posted this on Instagram. We've made the difficult decision to close the Walrus and the Carpenter this evening out of concern for the safety and well-being of our guests. Over the past 2 days, our security team has documented incidents directed at guests as they arrived at our restaurant, including harassment, name-calling, and spitting. Such deplorable actions have no place in our community, and we urge the union to stop this behavior on the picket line. After consulting with our security team, we felt we had no choice but to prioritize our guest safety. To every guest, regulars and first-time visitors alike who experienced or witnessed this, we are deeply sorry. You deserve a warm welcome, a great meal, and genuine hospitality. This is the experience we're always striving to provide, and we regret that it is not the one you received. And of course, this is also while we've got tourists from all over the world in the city. So I don't know if any of them got spit on, but I apologize on behalf of Seattle and the union thugs. And this is what they do. This is what they do. And is this helping? Is it helping workers? Is it helping workers that now the restaurant's closed down? They haven't reopened yet, by the way. Is that actually something that's benefiting workers and the people who are in the kitchen and still working at Walrus and the Carpenter? No. And spitting on people for going in? It's just the union thuggery never ends. And, you know, they do this because they think that they get away with it. And then they think, which it's assault to spit on someone, by the way. So police should be called. Somebody should file a police report. But I mean, bullying tactics have worked for the far left for a long time and for unions. And so you just have to, and I appreciate Walrus and the Carpenter being very firm and saying that, and putting the union picketers on blast, saying they're spitting on people. So there has to be some consequence, and you have to say the bullying isn't going to work. And so it is sad that they felt the need to close, because in that sense, the bullying, they're sort of giving in to what the union thugs want. But wild. All right, let's get to a double dose of unbelievable. Not only is Seattle not trying to help the homeless, they're trying to create more homeless people. And what better time than during the World Cup? We got a bunch of people here. Why not get some of them to get hooked on fentanyl and just stay and live off the Seattle and Washington State taxpayer teat? It seems like that's really what they want. So this is from our friend Jason Rance at Seattle Red. Washington's health department coaches FIFA World Cup visitors on how to use fentanyl, not how to quit. Now, I know this won't come as a surprise to you, because if you've seen the commercials that the Washington Department of Health has put out, it's like these commercials about, hey, find someone to use with, find a friend to use with, not like, here's resources to help you quit using fentanyl. They never do that. You have to dig so deep in the State Department of Health website to find any resources on getting over your addiction. It's insane. But you want to find out tips for using it better and more safely? They've got your back. So they've got this website, as Jason said, at the Department of Health, called Information for FIFA Visitors. And some of it's perfectly fine and appropriate. Medical facilities. Like, if you're traveling abroad, some of this stuff is like, I don't know how to call 911 in a foreign country. So some of it makes sense. Wildfire smoke, how to deal with hot weather, food safety. And then it even has, like, are there certain vaccines you need in order to visit the United States or Seattle? All of that I have really no issue with. Now, they have a whole segment on opioids. Great. Now, there's a lot of information there. Do you think any of that information explains that the best way to avoid dying from opioid use is just not to use it? Of course not. Talks about how unpredictable the drug supply is. It talks about opioid-related deaths. It says take precautions to protect yourself, such as starting with a small dose, not using alone, and making sure that the people you're with have access to Narcan, a medicine that can reverse an opioid overdose. They even tell them about the Good Samaritan law. Hey, if you're in town enjoying the World Cup, buddy ODs, you can call the police. You're not going to get in trouble. And they have one little link in there that goes to Prevent Overdose WAW. We've talked about this website before. So Prevent Overdose WAW, take action to prevent an overdose. It has information on where you can find naloxone, reverse an overdose, safety tips. This whole website is essentially a how-to. Use fentanyl, quote-unquote, safely. Of course, there is no way to use fentanyl safely. Literally no way to use fentanyl safely. And you have to dig so deep in that website to find resource to any services. And I'm not naive. Like, I don't mind necessarily the State Department of Health warning visitors like, hey, you're going to buy a pill on the streets. It probably has fentanyl in it. You're probably going to die. I don't mind that at all, because that's just reality. I don't want to live in some fake universe. But can't you just add a resource that says, here's how you can quit. Here's how you can get off. Just do that one thing for me. Just give them an option to also get off drugs, or even say in there, here's the law in Washington State. Seattle police will arrest you, but they know they won't. It's just outrageous. It's an invitation to come use drugs here. All right, that has been unbelievable. Coming up next, I just have to get into the San Francisco Giants controversy. It is so absolutely outrageous. I've been fuming about it all night. First, a whole bunch of you have taken the First Mark challenge and saved money on your insurance. FirstMarkInsurance.com, FirstMarkInsurance.com. The very best part is they work for you, not the insurance companies. So they always have your best interest in mind. And they're going to just analyze your current insurance, talk about you and your family's needs, go out, shop their market of carriers, come back with their recommendations. And like for Mike and I, we got better insurance for about the same price when we first started with First Mark. And then when we got our renewal the first time around, we saved money. And then this year, we saved even more. We saved $2,000 on our renewal. Didn't have to lift a finger. It was amazing. So firstmarkinsurance.com. They also do business, by the way. Undivided is insured through First Mark. They've been so responsive. Because remember, like, somebody, like, threatened to sue me, and I have insurance for that. And I was like, I might be getting sued. And they're like, don't worry about it. We got it. And it was just a really nice experience. Thankfully, I didn't actually get sued. And it was fine. FirstMarkInsurance.com, FirstMarkInsurance.com. The very best part is they work for you. Oh my gosh, this story drives me nuts, bananas. So San Francisco Giants, this is from San Francisco Gate. Fans chew out San Francisco Giants for team's weak response to Pride Night saga. And they quote a fan. It says, one gay Giants fan said, you broke my heart and my heart needs to heal. Okay. So what is this controversy that they're so mad about and protesting outside the stadium? So on the team's designated Pride Night, a few of the players, I think it was like three or four, they wrote a verse to Genesis on the hat. So it's got the pride hat, and then they wrote, I think it's Genesis 9:12-16 over it, okay? So apparently, and what the Giants say, and fans, for the record, some fans were livid. Some fans, and it's San Francisco. There's a ton of gay people in San Francisco. So some of them were offended by it. And the Giants said, well, it was a miscommunication. We gave them the option to either wear the hat or wear their normal hat, not the option to write the Bible verse over the pride hat, right? I think it's all just fruit of a poisonous tree, which is stop forcing, you know, everyone to celebrate or feel pressured to celebrate other people's sexuality. And why are we making baseball about this? But the head of the Giants, Buster Posey, he had a press conference and it was so absolutely uncomfortable.
Did you object to those nights when you were a player? And also did you or anyone from the organization talk to Tony, talk to the players and explain the importance of this demographic to your business, the importance of this evening for the fans?
I mentioned that I'm not going to revisit it. So if you want to ask baseball questions, I'll answer baseball questions.
Do you plan to reach out to the gay community about any of this or no?
Again, if you want to go baseball questions, I made my statement on it. I'll answer baseball questions.
But you have no response to the commissioner saying inadequate and unclear communication?
I'll answer baseball questions.
Is Devers blanked?
I believe so, yeah.
Buster, why do you want to only answer baseball questions? There are some very important matters that the public is debating outside this organization.
So exhausting.
I'm going to answer baseball questions.
Do you feel it's not your job as the baseball president of baseball operations? I mean, is this something we should be talking to Larry about?
Guys, we just need to keep it baseball related.
Well, you guys have made this baseball related because you had Pride Night. You allowed players onto the field that MLB said should not have had writing on their caps, violated MLB rules. Then MLB said that didn't communicate with the players properly, that they didn't have to wear the hat. So there's been no response about that.
We get it. Buster made a statement. If you guys have any baseball questions, he can answer those, or we're going to be done.
Oh my gosh. 2026 is wild. So first of all, one thing, I do agree that it is a baseball issue. You have Pride Night and you allow them to, and it almost is sort of a pressure campaign, you give them Pride-related jerseys and uniforms to wear. So no, you don't get to just stand up in front of the media and dictate what questions the media can ask you. I've always disagreed with that. I don't care the time, the setting, it's not your job to tell the media what the media is allowed to ask and not ask. And you did make it a baseball issue. My problem is, I mean, good, for the love of God, it's Pride Night. Why are we doing this to people? And there are, it's legitimate. Most religions in the world don't support gay marriage. And you only hear it ever like vilified when it's Christians that talk about their belief and they believe in traditional marriage, but like they never bring up that Muslims like also very opposed, but it's only if they got like white people. So it's weird, but I tend to think like, hey, you know, they're making a statement and Pride Night is a statement. They were making a statement about their religion. I think it probably would have been better if they just wore their regular hats and not like wrote on the pride hat. But this whole thing is just outrageous. Don't make people celebrate pride if they don't want to celebrate pride. I know it's their job and they work for a team and it's a team in a very gay city, but it's like, are we really doing this? It's just baseball. So I asked you guys in our daily subscriber show poll, was it wrong for Giants players to write Bible verses on their pride hats? Yes or no? Daryl, you go first. I see you really cooking on it over there.
It's
aren't you exhausted?
It is just exhausting. Is it wrong for players to write Bible verses on their pride hats? No. I don't think so. Is it wrong in terms of whatever contracts or whatever they agreed to when they're baseball players? I don't know the rules.
Yeah.
But in terms of just being in America,
right?
I mean, I think that's fine. I don't know if it's wrong you know, them being professional baseball players. That's not me. That's not me to decide.
Yeah, and the MLB said they're not going to get in trouble or fined for it because they said that they feel like the team didn't communicate that you can either wear this approved hat or this approved hat, but you can't just write stuff on your hat
or whatever it is. So the team did communicate or not?
No, the MLB says the team didn't properly communicate that. That there wasn't an option to, like, write a Bible verse on a hat, and I understand that they have contracts, as you said. So, yeah, I think we can all agree that, look, if you're playing for a team, you got to play by their rules.
Yeah.
Or else, yeah, you're going to get in trouble or get fined for it. But the reaction to this is outrageous. And, like, they would never allow, like, a Christian night at the San Francisco Giants. And all the San Francisco newspapers are like, you know, this is, you need to respect, you know, where you live. And it's like, okay, I know San Francisco has a lot of gay people, but there's also a lot of Christians. There's also people who don't care to have pride forced down their throat. And I think that's the issue. It's like, Daryl and I were talking yesterday. I used to love going to pride parades. And then it just became this thing of, like, more, less of a love and celebration and more of a, like, oh, all these people are against us and hate us and Donald Trump bad and, like, full-blown nudity and all these things. I'm like, okay, it was love and fun. And now what is it? I don't know. So 98% of you said no. It was not wrong for San Francisco Giants players to write Bible verses on their hats. Brandon Ferris says, absolutely not. As a gay American, I'm getting sick and tired of forcing pride down everyone's throats. It's the TQIA plus alphabet mafia that seem to be the ones wanting this, while most of us LGB don't want it or like this, forcing it at every event. Also, it's unclear if the hats were optional to wear, so we talk about, like, the rules being confusing. Three Dradge says, they're allowed phrases like equity and other lefty political nonsense. There's no reason they shouldn't be allowed Bible verses, too. SLK, if politics are allowed, like taking a knee during the anthem, then why would this be different? Freedom of speech. Yeah, and I don't know if they were fined. Players who took knees during the anthem were fined. I think that probably varied sport to sport.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, look, if you want to do something, make a statement, and it's against your contract, and you're willing to say, like, free speech has consequences.
Yeah.
When you're in a private setting like that, you work for a private business, and you're willing to say, it's worth it to me to get fined. I bet you if the rules had been clear, and they said, you can either wear the pride hat or you can wear a regular hat.
They would just wear the regular hat and probably no Bible verse.
Well, no, I actually think some of them still would have made a stand and said, yeah, if you're going to find me, but I'm going to write a Bible verse on this pride hat. I can see them doing that or write a Bible verse on their regular hat.
Right.
And then that's fine. They made the decision that they want to take a political stand like so many players have done. And there's a consequence for it, right?
Yeah.
Deanne Sanderson, if MLB allows other things to be written on the uniform, they can't exclude scriptures. A player should be allowed to wear their standard uniform if they disagree with the pride uniform, which it sounds like was the plan and is the plan moving forward. So just outrageous stuff. Absolutely outrageous. That poor guy. And he used to be catcher for the Giants, right? Yeah. So, like, he's been around for a long time.
He looked very uncomfortable.
He looked like he was crying.
Yeah.
And it's like, and the reporter's like, oh, you know, those sports reporters, when they get, like, an actual news, quote-unquote, story, they're like, but didn't you know how important this night is? It's like, let's just have no nights. Let's have no nights. Take it all away. No dogs at the dog park nights, because the cat people will get mad. The snake owners will be mad. Why can't I bring my thing to the park? No dad's night at the ballpark, because not everyone can be a dad. No mom's night. Not everyone can be a mom. Just take all the nights away, because Americans can't handle it. The media can't handle it. And everyone's lost their mind. Just play baseball, okay? What did Laura Ingraham, was that her who got in? Just shut up and dribble.
Was that Laura Ingraham?
Was that Laura Ingraham, or was it the one who's a little more like, a little crazy?
I don't know.
It might have been Laura Ingraham.
Okay.
Or was it Megyn Kelly? I don't know.
Was it Trump?
No, it wasn't Trump. It was some blonde Fox lady. Just shut up and dribble. I know that people are like, oh, that was bad at the time. Now I'm like, no, just shut up and dribble.
Yeah.
Shut up and hit. Shut up and catch. Shut up and whatever it is.
You're saying it when they're doing Bible verses, you know?
Yes, so
it's pretty consistent.
But look,
just
play the game. Let them play the game. Just let them play the game, right? Because the Bible verse thing wouldn't have been necessary if they didn't feel like someone else's values were being pushed on them.
Yeah.
It's just outrageous. All right, we'll get to our sanity check coming up next. We didn't do a live show today. It's pre-taped and recorded, so we can't do comments from the live stream. I apologize for that, but I'm sure you'll have lots to say on the show tomorrow. First, if you are concerned about what's happening in the Middle East, highly recommend reaching out to our friend Zach Abraham at Bulwark Capital and just having him and his team give you a second opinion on your retirement portfolio. It's like one of the most important things you'll do in your life is save for and plan for retirement and try to figure out what that's going to look like, how much it's going to cost. And so you want to consider all these factors and make sure your advisor is considering risk to the level they need to be. I mean, risk is always associated with it, but energy right now, I mean, that's the story. It impacts everything: inflation, transportation, manufacturing, global markets. So you need to make sure that your advisor and your portfolio are prepared. So reach out to Zach, knowyourriskpodcast.com, knowyourriskpodcast.com. Get a second opinion on your retirement portfolio. While you're there, you can subscribe to Zach's daily podcast on YouTube, follow him across social media platforms. He's a pretty good follow on X as well. He gets real fired up all the time. I've enjoyed watching him get more and more political as the days go by. And with that, let's get to our closing sanity check. All right, I want to end the show where we started the show, talking about the spread of socialism. Scott Jennings, of course, the just voice of reason on CNN, wanted to make sure to remind Americans it's not about New York City. It's not about Seattle. It's not about LA. It's about America. And this can happen anywhere.
You're going to see Mom Donnie inspired candidacies across the country. You already are. Michigan is a great example. Yeah. There's a Senate primary going on there, and I think Abdul El-Sayed is ahead in that. He's has a great chance to win. He's exactly like these socialist candidates in New York City. It's not just confined to a few districts here. It is spreading already, and if they win, you're going to see this inspiration for these kinds of candidacies across the country. The implications for the Democratic Party out there for 2028 are vast.
Just say no to socialism. That's what they need to do in schools. Instead of say no to drugs, say no to socialism. Although, say no to drugs didn't really work, so maybe that's a failed model. Just don't vote for socialists or communists. That has been today's episode of Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. Go to our website, undividedpod.com, undividedpod.com. You can shop our merch store. We've got totes. We've got stickers. We've got hats. Let your common sense freak flag fly. You can also sign up to become a subscriber and support our work if you haven't already. Undividedpod.com, undividedpod.com. See you tomorrow in our live show. We'll return tomorrow.